Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi everybody, welcome to today's show. My name is Spencer Walsh. Thank you so much for joining us here today. We got a great one for you as always. We are starting off with a really pretty important story. We're going to go deep on it here today from several different angles, several different perspectives, and it is all about the banks. The First Republic Bank has just reached a deal with other banks to receive $30 billion in deposits in an effort to restore confidence in the banking system after receiving some scare. And again, a lot of this stuff is manufactured. We're just going to break down. We're going to break down Silicon Valley. We're going to break down the regulations. We're going to break down, why all this stuff is happening here on the show. Also, an incredible moment on a talk show where a host asked a pundit, a right-wing pundit, to define what wokeness is. And it did not go well. You're going to want to stick around for that. And also, an incredible, incredible scenes right now in the country of France, where a retirement pension reform to raise the age from 62 to 64 is being met with essentially a general strike that has led the president there, Emmanuel Macron, to essentially force it through by taking an obscure part of the Constitution. I didn't even know they had this, to just go around the parliament. The only way the parliament now can go around him is to vote him out of office. So that would be something very interesting indeed. All right, we've got a great show. We'll start it right now. All right. So we got a good show for you today. We're starting off with First Republic. This is a really pretty crazy situation. We started with some of the New York Times reporting on this situation. So just the latest on the banks, stocks, and interest rates. So it's really kind of a multi-crisis situation here. So obviously it started off with Silicon Valley Bank, as we all know. And that was, that was pretty much kind of the opening bell, and partially because it was so closely related to two very sketchy groups of people in our society, venture capitalists and tech people. And they really had, because the venture capitalists kind of fund the tech people, and they really, really, in a big way, they fund the tech people, and they are also able to, prop up these kind of businesses that are very sketchy, that are, either go from making absolutely no profit to, amazingly, imperceptibly, no possible chance of profit ever. The venture capitalists kind of keep these guys going. And this is really the kind of purpose that Silicon Valley Bank did. They had a lot of bonds with government, long-term treasury bonds with government, which are very, very responsive to interest rate rises, which eventually happened. And that is, really what screwed them. That and a combination of certain people on Twitter who are very kind of powerful and influential, and using their kind of internal circles and channels to really kind of cause doubt about the ability of Silicon Valley Bank to pay back all of its debts. And then everyone kind of went crazy, tried to get back all the money from the banks as much as possible, just say, give me, give me, give me, give me. Everyone showed up at once, and that was what did the bank in, essentially. And that is really the kind of, the first part of the story. This is such a kind of multifaceted, very complex story. So what happens next is the government comes in and says, we're going to do what we've planned to. I actually don't know how long the FDIC has been around, maybe since the Great Depression, maybe since the Great Recession, not sure. But they have this insurance program that essentially says, I think actually since the Great Depression, but they have this insurance program that says, okay, all the banks, they will pay enough to this big pot that's going to be, you know, watched by the government to say, when we run out of money, or, you know, if one of these banks runs out of money, each bank's going to chip in a little bit to this pot, and we're going to pay everyone back up to $250,000. And the big worry is some of these businesses, some of these amazing Silicon Valley companies, you know, about raw water, you know, whatever. You know, just think about all the, you know, incredible things that have come out of Silicon Valley, you know, whatever that means to you. You know, all that stuff was going to go down the drain, apparently, if this was not completely bailed out. So, really, despite having, and I think we'll get into this a little bit later in the show, the Fed, about in back in 2021, they insisted Silicon Valley Bank posed no major risk to the system. They designated a systemic risk bank, meaning this bank essentially is too big to fail. That's a fancy word for saying too big to fail. They come in and say, we have to bail this out with the FDIC pot 100% of the way. Not just up to $250,000, 100% of the way, which is a really big step for a bank that is, frankly, not that big. And then, you know, obviously what the alternative would have been is to sell off the assets of the bank and then use the profits from that to pay back the remainder of the funds to the people who had deposits, which is a far majority of over $250,000. And apparently the bank had, you know, assets as such that, you know, most, you know, pretty much the average payout would be around 90%. So people would get around 90% of their money, but the FDIC, due to these people's urging, due to the David Sachs of the world, the VCs, the tech bros out there, due to their urging, that we essentially have set a precedent which says that now any bank is, you know, any bank that, you know, really no matter how big or small, is essentially up, you know, if they have enough kind of, essentially if they have enough rich people advocating for it, is now available to get 100% bailed out from the government with all their deposits. You know, which would be a nice thing, but the question is, you know how everyone's crying about, oh, we have no taxpayer money is going to this. Well, that's because of obviously the bank fees are being paid in, the insurance going to the FDIC, up to $250K. But if you keep going over that $250K limit every time without raising the fees of the bank, and, you know, even then they could still pass that fee raise off to the consumers very, very easily, you know, in terms of all the BS forms of ways that the banks can get you to pay more in fees and externalities and charges and stuff like that. They can still pass that off. But, you know, if they do that without raising the fees in the bank and making the pot bigger, making the pot, you know, fill up faster, essentially, that pot is going to run out very fast if you keep having to bail out banks like this, especially as interest rates rise. Because, as I said before, you got First Republic, you got Silicon Valley Bank, you got, I think, some of these other banks, you know, mid-sized regional banks. I think Comerica Bank was one that people were worried about. They have a lot of these similar situations where they got a lot of things, a lot of assets that are very, very susceptible to interest rates going up. And the question is, how would that affect interest rates? And also that, you know, the question is, you know, what, you know, will it be as much of a crisis to, you know, have to come in and do this? We've heard some whisperings about Credit Suisse as well. We'll get into that in a minute, but yeah, let's start here with First Republic Bank, which has been the center of the crisis, engulfing a sliver of the banking industry, will receive a huge injection of deposits from other lenders in a bid to stave off the collapse. Banks said on Thursday, four of the country's biggest banks, including JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo, agreed to contribute $5 billion each. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley contribute $2.5 billion each, and BNY Mellon, PNC Bank, State Street, Truist, and U.S. Bank will each add $1 billion. The deposits are uninsured, the bank said, effectively making them votes of confidence in the First Republic future. So essentially saying that they're just throwing money at the bank, First Republic, because they want other people, they want, you know, you and me out there to think, okay, First Republic is going to be legit in the future. And, you know, don't go to the bank and pull out your deposits, because we're giving you essentially the money that they don't have. We're giving them the money they don't have, which is essentially your money when it comes down to it. Top financial officials, including Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, immediately backed the deal. The show's support for First Republic is most welcome, they said in a statement, along with Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation Chairman Martin J. Grunberg and Michael J. Sue. I hope I'm saying that name right. The acting comptroller of the currency. And the rescue plan for the San Francisco-based First Republic is the latest bid to ease fears of consumers and investors that the banking industry was in the midst of a growing crisis following the announcement last week. The cryptocurrency-focused bank Silvergate was shutting doors in subsequent takeover of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank by regulators. Earlier Thursday, Yellen told the Senate Finance Committee that the American banking system remained sound and sought to reassure lawmakers that regulators were taking the necessary steps to protect the public. So, some of the key points here. Stocks in the U.S. swung from early losses to close 1.8% higher on Thursday, but the U.S. regional banks remained a significant focus of investor worry after the failures of SVB and Signature. On the other side of the Atlantic, the European Central Bank stayed the course by raising interest rates by half a percentage point, sinking the plan policymakers laid out. Christine Lagarde, head of the bank, acknowledged that severe financial market tensions remained, but the central bank would not wane in its commitment to fight inflation. So, yeah, that is a big part of it because now we have two pressures, two risks versus one in terms of this plan of raising interest rates to fight inflation, which if you look at the data, we've done this, again, a million times on the show before. If you look at the data, it does seem quite, it does seem very loosely linked, you know, the trend of inflation to the trend of interest rates. They keep going up. Inflation relatively is, you know, I think it stayed flat last month, but it definitely has been trending down as of late. So now we have that pressure, you know, which, you know, only raising interest rates makes a recession more likely, unemployment spikes more likely. So that's one pressure. And another pressure is, some banks could fail because they have all these assets that are so great in a low interest rate kind of paradise season. Everyone could be a genius in that kind of situation. But when things start tightening, you really see and start to find out how much that asset's worth because it's got to turn a profit because the interest rates are picking up more and more and more. So if that stuff doesn't start to happen, if it doesn't, you know, if you don't get that sweet, sweet ROI, it can be very, very hard to kind of continue to justify it. And that goes to kind of another situation here, kind of switching gears but staying on topic here. This goes to the whole setting of a precedent thing with the federal, with the bailouts here that we are seeing. And this is, you know, this is a big move the Federal Reserve made with Silicon Valley Bank to bail it out completely. And they said it was a systemic risk. It's no serious risk. They said it did pose a serious risk to the bailout system. So they didn't say they're going to blow. They're going to blow past the $250,000 limit. They're going to bail out everyone. They're going to go crazy on it. And the Fed. So yeah, they insisted that SVB though posed no serious risk to the financial system back in 2021. So less than 2 years before the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said it's a systemic risk as a justification to rescue Silicon Valley Bank's depositors, Powell approved the same basic mergers application, insisting the new larger institution would present no significant damage to the wider financial system, according to documents reviewed by The Lever. This is in The Lever here. David Sirota and Julia Rock. SVB's management has the experience and resources to ensure the combined organization would operate in a safe and sound manner, wrote Federal Reserve officials in June 2021, as they approved the company's $900 million acquisition of Boston Private Bank and Trust. The organization would not be a critical services provider or so interconnected with other firms or markets that it would pose significant risk to the financial system in the event of financial distress. So this was June 2021. What changed here? All six members of the Federal Reserve Board voted to approve the merger. Yet when financial distress hit 20 months later, the Federal Reserve Board unanimously voted, along with the FDIC, to invoke the rare systemic risk exemption, giving the government the authority to guarantee Silicon Valley Bank's uninsured deposits. The FDIC only insures up to $250,000, again, in each customer's deposits, and more than 90% of SVB's deposits reportedly uninsured at the end of 2022. On Monday, the Federal Reserve announced a review oversight of the bank leading up to its collapse. In the events surrounded by Silicon Valley Bank, though, Powell said, demand a thorough, transparent, and swift review by the Federal Reserve. Fed Vice Chair Michael Barr added, we need to have humility and conduct a careful, thorough review of how we supervised and regulated the firm and what we should learn from this experience. Maybe, you know, if they're going to be a systemic risk once, you know, make sure there is systemic risk when you give them the good stuff. Powell backed SVB's request for a merger approval despite only one major shareholder warning against the transaction, arguing that SVB was vastly overvalued and faced headwinds. The Fed's support for the SVB merger and assertion the bank would pose no systemic risk followed Powell leading or signing off on other deregulatory moves that may have enabled SVB's rapid collapse, the things that allow them to kind of dig their teeth into some of these bad investments. Under Powell, the Fed in 2019 sided with bank lobbyists and implemented a tailoring rule which loosened oversight of banks of SVB's size, including lifting liquidity requirements. So this is, again, the liquidity requirement is in a crunch how much kind of cash you have to have on hand as a bank to pay off all your depositors in a crunch, reducing the scope and frequency of stress tests and allowing those banks to opt out of reporting expected losses. The following year, Powell removed to exempt the bank's venture capital investments from the Volcker Rule, which is aimed at preventing federally insured banks from using deposits to invest in risky assets. The SVB has made substantial venture capital investments, had been pushing for that exemption since the Volcker Rule went into effect in 2015. The Federal Reserve had separately approved a five-year extension for SVB to come in compliance with the Volcker Rule in 2017. Beyond the deregulation, the Federal Reserve is also the primary entity tasked with supervising the bank and spotting warning signs. The Fed has much more superior knowledge, information, expertise, and access to the banks than short sellers, ratings agencies, and the media, yet they all appear to have done a much better job at identifying the very serious risks at SVB than the Fed, said nonprofit Better Markets in a statement calling for an independent investigation of the central bank's conduct in the lead-up to SVB's collapse. So, really it's quite some pretty remarkable stuff. And I think, you know, it shows, if I had to guess, I would say that it's pretty obvious why they did what they did. It's because people were yelling, people were complaining, and very, very powerful people, from Larry Summers to David Sacks on Twitter, were saying that, you know, please, 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 we need a bailout. It's going to be really bad if we don't get a bailout. So, of course, they got a bailout. So, that leads us now to our next story about the regulators. This was a few days ago, also in The Lever. And in the years before Silicon Valley's sudden failure, federal regulators gave a firm special exemption from the rules designed to prevent deposit-taking banks from engaging in risky investments and financial speculation, according to records reviewed by The Lever. So that would be the Volcker Rule. In 2017, the Fed granted the SVP a five-year reprieve from the Volcker Rule, and the decision allowed SVP, a major lender in the tech industry, to remain a traditional deposit-taking bank while also maintaining its risky investments in venture capital, a form of private equity that funds startups in the tech industry, which is recently being battered by mass layoffs and financial losses. All right. We got an amazing, amazing video I really want to play for you coming up in 35 seconds.
It's the Spencer Walsh Radio Network. Oh, see.
Going to park in the latest trap. Got stopped by a late cop. She got me thinking I could date a cop. Cause her uniform fit so tight. She ran me by the right. She put me in a pile. She caught up all the lights. She said, I have the right to remain silent. Now I gotta holler. Sounding like a siren.
All right, so we're back here on Newsflash today. We got an amazing opportunity, rare guest at a spur of the moment. I got Kenan Akde standing by. Kenan is full, you know, international econ major, isn't that right?
Yes, that's correct. No, sir.
All right, so, Kenan, I'm sure you were surprised about the SVB news. What was your reaction?
Very surprised. The whole econ department is talking about it.
How do you think it was? What is your first impression about how it happened, just real quick, and how do you think it was handled?
So, how it was handled, I don't have much information about that, but exactly the mechanisms by which it happened, I can explain if that's what you want me to do right now.
Well, you don't have any impression, like, you don't have any thoughts on how, like, what the federal government did. Do you think it was good? You know, do you think it was smart? You know,
I haven't read enough to have a full grasp on what the federal government did exactly.
Okay, so how do you think it fell?
Essentially, what happened was, it stems from the central bank raising interest rates, and a combination of the central bank raising interest rates and the decision by the Silicon Valley Bank to buy lots of long-term government bonds. And essentially what happened was, after COVID stimulus, after the Russia-Ukraine war, inflation started rising. As a result, the central bank hiked interest rates. After the central bank hiked interest rates, lots of the customers of Silicon Valley Bank, which were predominantly large tech companies, decided to use less debt to finance their growth because debt became more expensive as interest rates rised. So instead of putting on debt, they decided to withdraw more and more of their deposits from the Silicon Valley Bank. And what that did is that put pressure on the Silicon Valley Bank to liquidate their assets to pay for the customers' demands.
So should now, do you think, because it's true that a lot of other banks may be in this position, right? Like similar position?
Similar position, but a unique thing about Silicon Valley Bank is it's very concentrated and it has a lot of large corporate customers.
Do you think that was why it was able to go past the Federal Reserve bailout limit?
I can't comment on that.
You can't comment on that?
You will allow me not to comment on particular stories in the press.
Okay. What do you think about? So, do you think they should now stop raising interest rates because that's going to put more banks in jeopardy?
We'll see. I mean, I really don't know how many banks are at risk because, again, Silicon Valley Bank is a very, very specialized bank in terms of their customer base. Obviously, we need to keep inflation in check. By how much we should raise the interest rate, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Great to hear that from Kenan there. But we're going to go now to this video, this long-promised video that I thought was really, really quite entertaining to me, to say the least. So this is Brianna Joy Gray. She is hosting the show called Rising, and she is actually talking to Bethany Mandel. This is a few days ago. Bethany Mandel is one of those classic people who is right wing kind of commentator, but very much in the social justice, anti social justice warrior movement, kind of the anti trans, anti woke, anti PC police kind of culture, and definitely a very right wing person here they had on the show, which is about, you know, how, you know, left, right, we can all get along type of thing. Brianna Joy Gray, former Bernie Sanders press secretary, worked in the Bernie Sanders campaign, asked her a pretty simple question that just she was not able to really answer quite well at all.
Of Americans consider themselves very liberal, and probably fewer of them consider themselves to be woke. And so, you know, when we talk about traditional...
What does that mean to you? Would you mind defining woke? Because it's come up a couple times, and I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
So, I mean, woke is sort of the idea that this is going to be one of those moments that goes viral. I mean, woke is something that's very hard to define, and we've spent an entire chapter defining it. It is sort of the understanding that we need to totally reimagine and redo society in order to create hierarchies of oppression. It's hard to explain in a 15-second soundbite.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, you can tell she is so mad at being put in that position. The first, like, you know, you're really never supposed to ask me direct questions about my ideas. Like, no, that is not fair. You know, and then she gets, you know, I don't can tell which one of my favorite. She just knowing that, okay, this is going to be the moment where I go viral, you know, in a negative way. And, of course, she did go incredibly viral for that moment in kind of certain circles of Twitter. And or is it – I think another one was like – it's like – she said some like very kind of contradictory thing.
That's very hard to define, and we've spent an entire chapter defining it.
Okay, yeah, that was something that was very hard to define, and we spent an entire chapter defining it. So, like, you know, don't worry about that. You know, why is it so hard to define? Well, I don't know. Read my book to find out. But anyway, just like very so like really disingenuous. Like, I feel like maybe if she was like, you know, a little bit more loosened up, maybe she's a little bit nervous, you know, she could have. Because a lot of people are like, oh, is it a nerve thing, or is she just kind of like saying what she doesn't really mean, or just like, is there no real true definition of woke, you know, which I think it's more kind of the third one, because if you look at it, like, there, you know, it just, like, so many different things, like, in the culture war setting, it means so many different things to so many different people, depending on what advantage you want to score out of it, you know, depending on how you want to be portrayed, like, you know, corruption, you know, some people say, oh, you know, corruption means, you know, it does have a written dictionary definition. You know, that is something that is unarguable. But it is clear, it is very clear that there is little, you know, it just does not make any sense. Or, you know, to really, I think, say that there is a to agreed upon definition of like what woke is for everyone, because just like corruption, you know, everyone's really going to try and use it to their own advantages. You know, being woke maybe, you know, good thing to some people, bad thing to other people. You know, it may be to certain segments of the right wing, they may think something is being woke, and certain segments of the right wing think it's not woke to hold, you know, more moderate people may think it's not woke to hold a certain belief. You know, it's really up to a big, big gulf of interpretation. But yeah, and I really don't think Breonna Joy Gray intended it as a kind of gotcha moment. Here's her reaction to it the next day.
Now, I want to be really clear. I did not intend for this to be a gotcha moment. I asked her to define woke because I wanted to know in good faith. And that's because I know that many people take that word to mean many different things. And I wanted to figure out whether I might agree with her on certain points, as I had done earlier in the interview. Alternatively, I wanted to be able to articulate why we differed on other aspects of her argument without devolving into the typical shouting matches that go, woke is bad, no, woke is good, oh no, you just don't know what woke really means. Say what you want about me, but I don't exactly have a reputation of being a woke scold. I spent a good part of my career as a leftist journalist critiquing what I believe to be certain overreaches of the left that, in my view, undermine important substantive fights for racial, gender, and economic equality. My very first two viral articles as a journalist were critiques of weaponized identity politics and of cultural appropriation discourse. In those articles, I questioned whether the gender and or race of politicians like Hillary Clinton and Kamala Harris were in fact being used to insulate them from legitimate concerns about their records on criminal justice issues or, in Clinton's case, her choice of an anti-choice VP. I highlighted the perversity of Clinton using, dare I say, a kind of wokeness to excuse not regulating the banks more harshly in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. Well, breaking up the banks and racism was a line she used to push back against Bernie's call for greater punishment for the bankers that destroyed the economy.
I think that's kind of like the classic, and I think honestly mostly correct, like kind of left-wing line there, because it's like, yeah, we've seen in so many different ways how wokeness, how identity politics can be. And that also goes to my point before about how wokeness can be different things to different people. And that's why it's so kind of stupid to, you know, use it and kind of legislate it with it in the way that someone like Ron DeSantis says. It could mean, you know, we have to ban books in schools, or it could mean, you know, breaking up the banks doesn't mean racism will end. That sentiment is a stupid sentiment, which I think is it's a perfectly good belief to hold. But it is really kind of a tough question to think about, which I think will be put towards many more people in a kind of a growing debate over time, which is really, is it worth kind of going through with certain people like Bethany Mandel to figure out, is there some points that we agree to build a kind of anti-identity politics alliance? I'm honestly thinking about that question right now based on what I've seen with Bethany Mandel, her really vociferous, especially really vociferous defense of Israel. She will be happy to turn identity politics on you the moment it suits her political beliefs, on the Israeli front. And B, perhaps, really believes some of the stuff that, it's not just, she's being canceled. She just likes to make a joke. It's some really kind of unsavory stuff that, could be going on there if you go down that road and associate with people like that too much. But, the question is, is making that separate argument that Breonna Joy Gray there was making, is that invalid? Which, honestly, I don't think it is. You should be able to, push past this kind of really dumb identity litmus tests for political positions. I think, representation, I would say, it does to respect, it matters. It matters, I think, a lot in culture. It matters a lot in, I think, for example, like medicine and things like that, where you're really kind of helping people. But I think when you are running for office, the bar one most important thing should be your beliefs, your policy positions, and how convicted you are and what your ability is to carry those beliefs out. Because I think, that is just such a clear, clear thing. And, I think defining woke away from that is a worthy goal. But trying to find common ground with people like that, kind of on a basis of, we both don't like woke, kind of an anti-woke alliance, is, I think, pretty wrong-headed. You're going to be really just be like aggressive about it. You just would say no. This is not how it's supposed to go. It's not, my way is this way, your way is the wrong way. I think you cannot be afraid to say that to certain people on the right who kind of exploit it for really dumb and kind of really dangerous purposes, like we're seeing in Florida, which just is absolutely unbelievable to me. All right, we're going to switch gears and take a trip across the pond. That's next. My name is Spencer Walsh. This is the Spencer Walsh Radio Network. And if you're listening to one of our podcasts, whether it's Newsflash, Hidden History, The Spencer Walsh Show, or something else, ladies and gentlemen, we have one simple request of you. Please be sure to rate us, subscribe to us if you like us, and leave us a comment, because just like all of you, sometimes we need that feedback in our lives, good or bad. We want to hear what you have to say. So please do those steps. Make SWRN content better. And thank you so much for listening. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are on our last story today, and it really is a pretty remarkable situation unfolding in France, taking you through a pretty an unbridled day, as we're taking you straight from the source. This is in Liberation, kind of a broad left-wing French magazine or website here, which I think is pretty cool to see. Some we should have more of, I think, in the United States. And this is a direct French translation. So it begins. All that for this, after having repeated in all tones that a majority exists to adopt its pension reform, the executive chose to go through with Article 49.3 of the Constitution to have the amending... why can I do a French accent? Normally I can do a French accent, I swear. So pretty much what happened is they got this article in the Constitution, 49.3, which essentially says... that with the reform, the réforme de retraite in French, there you go. It is going to be used. It was used, say, for the 100th time in the Republic. In the under the Fifth Republic, this 49.3 clause of the Constitution to have the amending financing bill adopted without a vote. So they're saying that they're pushing this deeply unpopular pension reform bill that's going to raise the raise the age of retirement from 62 to 64. The whole entire left wing of the parliament essentially holding up saying 64 is no good, 64 years is no good. And I think that it's really going to be a remarkable, you're calling it the beginning of impotence today, in France, in this magazine here for Macron, because it seems like the right wing here is pissed even about this too, because it's just so, so unpopular. Apparently, the polls coming out now, 27% of people want to Macron to step down, which is pretty incredible because it's, 27% of people, yeah, again, in his Macron's party want him to step down. And which very well could happen now, because the only way you can get around Article 49.3 of the Constitution to, which is what they're going to do now, Macron's government, to force this bill through, is to vote the government out through a vote of no confidence. And now parties, I believe on both on the left and the right, have called for that as well. So they may just get their chance. So let's start with 8:30 a.m. The head of state went to bed, letting it know that he wants a vote in the National Assembly on the pension reform and shaking the threat of dissolution in the event of failure. Emmanuel Macron rises this Thursday to account the missing votes and avoid the political clash. He receives breakfast. Receives for breakfast the leaders of a majority that is no longer one, including Edouard Philippe on the phone from India. At the same time, the boss of Les Républicains. Senators, Bruno Retailleau, the Republicans essentially used to be like the Republicans in America, the biggest party, the biggest right-wing party, but then Macron kind of ate up their vote when he first got elected, so now they're kind of junior partners in his coalition. But the boss in the upper chamber of that now much smaller party, Bruno Retailleau, adds doubt to doubt, evoking a very risky vote. We are between 30 and 35 LR deputies, 4 and 20 against. It's quits or doubles. The morning counts show less than 10 votes in advance for favor of the text. The line remains to go to the vote. By 10:45 a.m., the first step had been taken for the government. The Senate had adopted, as expected, the text resulting from the joint committee. Two joints there on that. The right fulfills at least part of the contract, 193 votes against 114, a large majority, but the alerts are already there. The No camp recorded two additional votes compared to Saturday. Six elected Le Républicain vote against, 19 abstain. Among the centrists, also members of the senatorial majority, 16 oppose the text and 13 refuse to take part in the vote, just like Macron and Senator Marie-Laure Fenner-Horth, who is apparently part of the Macron party and now turning on him now. By 12:02, Macron and the PM, who is essentially the kind of junior minister, it was junior to Macron, kind of president of the Senate, essentially the VP, playing a pretty to Macron here, whose name is Elizabeth Borne, head to head here at the Quai d'Orsay, I believe that is that the presidential palace. I believe it is. It is a Quai in the 7th arrondissement of Paris. Okay. Probably near the capital or something. Whatever. Anyway, so Macron allows himself an allusion to pension reform. At this speech, he said, "Today alone shows the making of smart savings. It is not a spontaneous movement, neither of the nation nor of the administration, and supposes the choices that I assume. Meanwhile, the police lift blockage of garbage collections at the entrance to the depot of the cleaning company Pizzorno in Vitry-sur-Seine, Val-de-Marne. Shortly before 2 p.m., the information will begin to spread. Uncertain of having a majority, the prime minister would now lean for 49.3. That is in the Assembly Nationale. The Prime Minister Sedan rushes to the courtyard of the Elysee. On the menu, second head-to-head between Borne and Macron, followed by a final meeting with the leaders of the majority. Half an hour later, 15 minutes before the resumption of the debates at the Assembly, the arbitration is communicated. The Council of Ministers is convened to urgently trigger Article 49.3 of the Constitution, which allows the adoption without a vote on text. Among you all, I am not the one who risks his place or his seat, Macron told his ministers, according to the account given by participants, but I consider that, as it stands, the final and economic risks are too great. We cannot gamble with the future of the country. Salvador Couto Colón in the assembly, the opposition deputies condemn a denial of democracy. Parliament is flouted. It's a shame for democracy, said the protest of the National Secretary of the Communist Party, Fabian Roussel, who is part of the NUPES Alliance, which is the big left-wing bloc, second largest group in the French Parliament. For whom this government is not worthy of the Republic. The President's Assembly, Yael Braun-Pivet, opens and immediately suspends the situation, the session. On the way from the Élysée, the ministers are not yet present in the hemicycle, which I believe is the room they call the Parliament, boos the opposition as the ministerial procession passes the porch of 126 Rue de l'Université. When Born enters the hemicycle and takes the path up the rostrum, the deputies of La France Insoumise, LFI, the biggest left-wing party in the big NUPES group, stand up, each brandish a sheet bearing the inscription, 64 years is no good, and saying, the Marseille. And that sounded a little something like this.
La parole est à Madame la Première Ministre.
That is the President of the Senate announcing Elisabeth Borne up to the main podium. And then the signs go up on the left wing of the red benches. Endeavoring to calm the uproar.
Je vais demander à chacun des parlementaires qui brandit une pancarte de bien vouloir cesser immédiatement
being shouted at the government from the far right. Born quoted his her predecessor, Michel Rocard, in 1990. She said to the chamber, in a ballot where everyone would be allowed to vote according to their conscience, allow me to say that I'm sure these provisions would gather a majority, perhaps even a large majority, words that she takes up on her own. If everyone voted according to their conscience and incoherence with their past positions, we would not be here this afternoon, retorted the Prime Minister. It's a blow for the LR's unwilling or unable to pass a reform, which they had long defended, following a blow from the left when Born evoked the behavior of those who did everything to block the debate. Finally, a blow for the National Rally, hid in the shadows throughout the debates, which was the right-wing party, National Rally, Le Pen's party. The Marseille continues to resound from the rebellious benches, and Born ended, uncertainty hovers except for a few voices. We cannot risk, we cannot take the risk of seeing 175 hours of parliamentary debate collapse and the Prime Minister to formalize the use of 449.3 without doubting the forthcoming tabling of one or more motions of censure aimed at overthrowing the government. Thus, she concludes, it is parliamentary democracy which will have the last word. So yeah, really chaos as the socialist Arthur Delaporte. She's still calling for order there. This is earlier today. Still calling for order. We are living in a totally delusional sequence, reacted the socialist Arthur Delaporte outside the hemicycle. The Calvados deputy believes that Born is no longer has a place in Matignon. The general will have to think about separating from his chief warrant officer to make a new start. Born fought defending a Renaissance deputy. That's Macron's party. The context was difficult. No one can blame him for his combativeness. I don't know why the translation keeps calling him Elizabeth Born as a lady. Afterwards, it was an impossible scenario. It is her fault. In the presidential camp, we are already pointing to the point. There are people already pointing to the culprit, LR. They had the butter and the money of the butter, continues this deputy. I find it hard to believe they will vote for a motion of no confidence on the other side of the Senate in support of demonstrators who gather at the Palace de la Concorde. Gather at Place de la Concorde. Jean-Luc Mélenchon, one of the biggest left-wing figures not elected in France, pointed to the physical collapse of the presidential minority. Macron wanted to make believe that he had a majority, but that is not the case. He lost, he told the reporters later in the cafe. The former deputy wants to go there step by step, day by day. We play each day as if we're going to win. On the other hand, with a motion of a censure, he wants as wide as possible. Even the event of failure, the tighter the gap, the more we will score. This is, you know, really just incredible stuff. Probably, I would have to say, like, the reason I'm trying to highlight this so much is because France is just right now, hands down, the most effective left wing in Europe, marshaling 60%+ of the country behind this. Just two years on the retirement age. Like, that would fly with probably 67% of the votes in the Senate. Easy. You know, like, that is something that would just pass, you know, without question, here in America. But now, like, they almost shut their country down over it. They have a mobilized left, they have an organized left, and they know just consciously the French people, you know, they follow their government enough to know that this is going on, and they, you know, just culturally is something that they cannot and will not accept. I think that is a really, really clear, direct, and incredible thing to see. And, you know, especially if they use the French national anthem as a rallying cry, you know, how they, you know, really are strategically effective, have protests out all the time, aggressive, they act like they're going to win. I think that is a big part of it. And, you know, it's because most of the time they end up doing pretty damn well. Yeah, so it really does kind of make it, you know, people are kind of getting pretty pissed, you know, at each other. LR, which is the junior right-wing party in the coalition, the smaller right-wing party, made 49.3 the failure of government without a word about the procrastination of the right, which imposed its use. This outcome is a scathing blow for the president of the party, Eric Chaudy, who clearly without control over a good part of his troops. In their own press release, the Renaissance deputies condemn and return the inconsistency and irresponsibility of the of the LR, the Les Républicains, the smaller party there. Half of the LR deputies no longer belong to a government party and have become populist, saying they just got to stick together, even though they made suggested reform in the first place, estimated former minister Nicolas Sarkozy. Eric Wirth, a now Macronist deputy, said the right is not the end of his quarrels. The Republicans will not join and will not vote for any motion of censure, assures Chaudy, now contradicted by at least two LR deputies, or Elion Pradi and Maximo Minot, who do not exclude supporting such a text. Of the catch-all group Lio, Freedom, Independence, Overseas, and Territories, which could bring together the opposition's right included. I don't really know what that means. It's probably the translation. Yeah, not really doing too well for me here. But anyway, guest of 20 hours on TF1, the Prime Minister insists the fact that she engages the responsibility of her government, not on the initial text that of the executive, but on the compromise resulting from discussions in Parliament. Very shocked, she said, by the boos of the opposition. She denounces those who want chaos in the assembly and in the street. The chaos, the disorder, she insists, is the modest French who pay the consequences. And she says that without any regrets. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens to the Macron government here in a really remarkable situation coming out of France, which, you know, we will be following for you very, very closely right here on Newsflash.